Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Here in the third hour, we're going to wrap up our conversation, our hymn study, with Pastor Henry Gehrke, the hymn that we've been looking at, Evening and Morning, by Paul Gerhard. And then we're going to be talking with Rod Dreher about his book, Crunchy Cons. Tomorrow on the program, Lutherans and Political Involvement, Uwe Simonetto will be our guest. We're going to hear a little bit of audio open lines after we let Henry out of Studio A, back to his daily routine. Perhaps something on the lineup of the GOP candidates as it continues to come together this far in advance of the presidential race. Henry, before we hear the last of this hymn, the entire four stanzas that we have before us, give us your final thoughts on Paul Gerhard's hymn, Evening and Morning.
Well, I think the hymn itself is reflective of his theology of the cross, the theology of the cross that informed all of his life, his teaching, his preaching. And this theology of the cross focuses in on what God has done for us, especially in and through his Son, Jesus Christ. This gift that of salvation goes along with all of the other gifts that God gives us in helping us to maintain and sustain this life that we have.
Let's hear the entire hymn by Paul Gerhard. It's called Evening and Morning.
Evening and morning, sunset and dawning, wealth, peace and gladness, comfort in sadness, these are your words that bring glory to you. Times without number,
the hymn Evening and Morning by Paul Gerhard. Pastor Henry Gehrke has been kind enough to come down this afternoon for this hymn study. to Studio A. He is director of the Concordia Seminary Chorus, and Concordia Seminary will be hosting a Paul Gerhardt Hymn Festival this Sunday afternoon at 3, March the 18th, at the Chapel of St. Timothy in Titus. Henry, thanks again for being our guest, for coming down.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Henry had mentioned there in his final thoughts the theology of the cross that runs through all of Paul Gerhardt's poetry as this poetry comes down to us as hymns for us to sing. There's nothing more central. And here is a man who 400 years ago is living a life that many of us would hardly wish on anyone. And yet, as it is very clearly witnessed to in the words that he writes, his eyes remained fixed upon the cross of Jesus Christ. And he wasn't looking to the cross of Jesus Christ thinking, well, if Jesus went through that, I guess I can get through this. No, because the cross for Gerhardt was far more than just an example of human suffering or of the fact that things will get better after they've been so very bad. No, he understood the cross as the sure and certain signal of God's enduring love for him as a sinner. He looked at the cross as one for whom Christ suffered and died. And then, of course, as he observed the circumstances of his life, he could only understand them and trust in God via the one who hung dead on the cross for him. So he did not measure whether or not he lived at a time of war or disease, whether or not he was employed or unemployed, or whether or not he retained his family members as a sign of God's disfavor, but looked steadfastly at Jesus Christ crucified for him and knew the grace and the love and the provision of God for Christ's sake. This theology of the cross is central to what they're teaching young men who study for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's also central to what they're teaching younger men at Christ Academy 2007 every summer. It's a two-week residential program where high school-aged men travel to Concordia Theological Seminary, stay there for 2 weeks, attend classes and chapel services, and interact with the faculty and examine the possibility of studying for a Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry. To find out more about Christ Academy, just go to our website, issuesetc.org. You'll see the logo for Christ Academy 2007 right there. Or you can call Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their number, 1-800-281-2155. 1-800-281-2155. I'm sorry, it's 1-800-481. How many times have I said that number? 1-800-481-2155. Always trust what Jeff types on the screen. In a few minutes, Rod Dreher joins us from the Dallas Morning News. He's written this book called Crunchy Cons. I'm very interested in the Crunchy Con Manifesto, which includes things like, we are conservatives who stand outside the conservative mainstream. Therefore, we can see things that matter more clearly. It criticizes conservatism of being too focused on money, power, the accumulation of stuff, and insufficiently concerned with the content of our individual and social character. This is the breath of fresh air. We'll see what Rod Dreher has to say in just a few minutes about who'd he be voting for if the wide-open presidential field in 2008 survived all the way to the presidential election. But before we bring on our guest, Rod Dreher, author of this book, Crunchy Cons, let's listen to a story from ABC News on the GOP presidential candidates as it's shaping up in advance of 2008.
And we are talking about the possibility of three new Republican presidential candidates. One big announcement is expected today. Senator Chuck Hagel is likely to throw his hat into the ring, as you mentioned. He's an anti-war Republican, and his presence would certainly change the tone of the debate on the Republican side.
We had a very few days.
Sharpen your elbows, Republican hopefuls. Three more potential rivals are poised to jump in, clearly smelling opportunity.
Not everybody is thrilled about the choices that they have before them.
Today, Senator Chuck Hagel makes an announcement about his political future in Omaha. Most expect he'll join the race. He'd be a unique voice in the campaign. The conservative senator and Vietnam vet has been a consistent and open critic of President Bush's handling of the Iraq War. And a political
political confessional late last week from this man, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, made plain he's contemplating a bid. In an attempt to test the waters, Gingrich admitted to social conservative James Dobson that his extramarital affair was going on as he led the effort to impeach President Clinton.
There were times when I was praying and when I felt I was doing things that were wrong, but I was still doing them. And I look back on those as periods of weakness.
Like Rudy Giuliani, Gingrich has been divorced twice, which could also hurt him with religious conservatives, but he still scores high in polls among Republican hopefuls.
Sometimes people get into a race like this just to make sure that their point of view is given full voice. I think that's one of the things we may be seeing from Gingrich. He wants to, as he would put it, shape the debate.
Finally, popular conservative and former Senator Fred Thompson, actor turned senator turned actor, back on the air in Law and Order, suggested on Fox News he might again trade in Hollywood life for politics.
I'm giving some thought to it. I'm going to leave the door open.
Now, Thompson says he's been getting a lot of pressure from top Tennessee Republicans to get in because the public is looking for something different.
Now, tomorrow on the program, I want your answer to this question. We're going to play a little audio for you, and then think about this. We've got Rudolph Giuliani, who was on his third wife. His third wife was his mistress before she was his wife, and he is polling highest among the Republican candidates, pre-candidates, what do you call them at this stage of the game? Newt Gingrich, who is apparently at least indicating he might throw his hat into the ring. Multiple marriages. Has recently admitted on Focus on the Family to having an extramarital affair right in the midst of doing his duties during the Monica Lewinsky affair with President Bill Clinton. Does it concern you at all that these Republican candidates have a checkered past, have multiple marriages, and admitted affairs within marriage? That's my question for you tomorrow on Issues Etc. We're going to do an hour of open lines with that audio and that question for you tomorrow on the program. Does a candidate's personal life affect how you vote or whether or not you would vote for them? Think about it tonight, consider it, and give us a call tomorrow during Audio Open Lines. Well, we've got quite a variety, don't we? Think about it. From Hagel, who is poised to announce, to Newt Gingrich, very different viewpoints on a whole number of issues. From Mitt Romney, who's kind of made a recent conversion of sorts to the pro-life issue, to Rudolph Giuliani, who has been and apparently always will be pro-choice. The variety on the Republican side is remarkable this far out. Now, there's always a lot of variety, and it tends to get whittled down the closer we get to the primaries, but the variety is remarkable. On the Democratic side, it appears as though the field is not as wide, but it may also fill up. We have Hillary Clinton. We have Senator Barack Obama. We have John Edwards. There are a lot of people who'd like to occupy the White House. Rod Dreher joins us for the remainder of the program. He's an editorial writer and columnist for the Dallas Morning News and author of the new book, Crunchy Cons. Rod, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Great to be back, Todd.
I got to ask how the weather is down in Dallas. It's my hometown.
Well, I'm actually talking to you from South Louisiana. I'm visiting my mom and dad down here, and there's a horrible thunderstorm now. Our neighbors are losing phone service, so I hope that you and I can still stay on the phone for the rest of the hour.
I certainly hope that you and I can stay on the phone. No doubt about that, Rod. It's a wide open side, a wide open variety of candidates who are presenting themselves for consideration in 2008. If by some quirk of circumstance we got to 2008, and there was still this variety of candidates, who would you be voting for, Rod?
Oh, you had to ask a tough one straight off, didn't you? I don't know, to be perfectly honest. I really don't know, Todd. I'm so disappointed with the field on both sides. I feel like I usually have voted on culture of life issues primarily, and abortion and stem cell research and so on, and I don't believe the Republicans can be counted on to hold the line there, certainly not with this crop. I like Governor Huckabee. I mean, he's been good on these issues, but then again, he's been bad on the immigration issue, which is also important to me. The Democrats are hardly worth considering, except I do like very much the way Barack Obama talks about race. And, you know, if he were to be elected president, it'd almost certainly be without my vote, but I think that one thing he could give the country is a new way to talk about race. But as it stands right now, I don't feel like I have a candidate, and I've never really felt that way.
The news out of a more personal nature, Newt Gingrich admitted recently on Focus on the Family to having an extramarital affair at the time when Bill Clinton was also having one. And Rudolph Giuliani, of course, on his third wife, and his present wife was his mistress before she was his wife. Does the personal life of candidates impact how crunchy cons, as you call them, vote?
Well, you know, I can't speak for everybody who adheres to my kind of conservatism, but the whole situation with the Iraq war has, and the way the Bush administration has driven up the deficit so high, and all in violation of every conservative fiscal principle I ever believed in, has really taught me that just having a man who is a believer, and I know President Bush is a Christian believer, and a good man in office is not enough. I would find it very difficult to vote for Rudy Giuliani, not only because of how he feels on abortion and gay marriage, but because he was my mayor when I was in New York. He did a great job as mayor of New York, but that same pugnacity and tenacity that he needed to make New York City work, I don't know that it would work as president of the United States. So I find myself in a period of profound depression about politics, like so many social and religious conservatives. And I wouldn't rule out voting for a deeply flawed candidate who is personally flawed but had the right policies, but it's not something I'd be excited about. So I wish I could give you a more definitive answer, but I think that a lot of us on the religious right are going to have a lot of thinking to do before we go into the voting booth during the primaries.
Who are the crunchy cons? You just mentioned the religious right. Is it a subset within that? Who are the crunchy cons?
You know, when I wrote my book, I remember telling my publisher in New York, Crown, which is a division of Random House, I said, the kind of conservatives who are really going to understand what I'm talking about here are primarily religious conservatives. People who are the economic conservatives, the more libertarian types, this is going to be anathema to them. But what crunchy conservatism is, that's just the sort of trendy name we came up with for a revival of traditionalist conservatism, which is a conservatism that is mostly concerned about the health of the culture and about morality and the spiritual state of the commonweal. And I find that the kind of conservatives who have responded most enthusiastically to my book are conservatives who are men and women of faith. And it's not that every religious conservative agrees with this, but if this kind of conservatism is going to make sense to you, you almost certainly have to have a prior religious commitment.
Okay, so if someone says, well, the crunchy cons are just another way of repackaging the old religious right, how would you respond?
Well, I would say that that's not quite accurate. What I'm doing with my crunchy con project is going back to the 1940s and 1950s, when there were two strains of American conservatism. You had the libertarians on one side, who were mostly interested in economics and in getting the state out of the private lives of people. And then you had the traditionalists, people like Russell Kirk, Richard Weaver, who, as I said earlier, were more concerned with the spiritual and moral health of the culture. And they went at each other with hammer and tongs a lot of the time. They were, because they were diametrically opposed to each other. But they realized that they had more in common, actually, and wanted to come together to fight the dominant liberalism of the period than separated them. So they got together with the so-called fusionist movement, came together with the Barry Goldwater campaign, and got completely creamed. But they kept at it, and then in 1980, we elected Ronald Reagan. But I find along the way that a lot of religious conservatives have come to see our primary concern as being around issues of sexuality, i.e. abortion, gay rights, things like that, which are enormously important, certainly abortion. But I think along the way we've lost sight of the fact that that we are required as Christians to be concerned about all of a wider variety of things. For example, good stewardship of the earth. And we need to be more concerned about how the economy affects families and the ability of communities to maintain a strong moral community. And that's the sort of thing I'd like to see more Republicans talk about, because a lot of us conservatives are not going to vote Democratic as long as the Democratic Party is so hostile to religious believers and so hostile to pro-lifers. But I think there's a lot more room on the Republican Party for the GOP to move more in our direction on issues of the economy and of the environment.
Is there an age demographic or any other aspect of a demographic that fits crunchy cons, as you call them?
That's a great question, Todd. I went to speak to a local group in Dallas, a Rotary Club or something like that, and I talked about my ideas, and I rooted everything in traditional conservatism. But the people like 45, 50 and older, you know, their eyes glazed over. But the younger members of this club rushed up to the stage afterwards and said, "Oh, this is great. I'm so glad to hear you saying this. It is really speaking to me." I talked to a seminarian at a Presbyterian seminary, sent me an email saying, "I love your book." We had Jim Wallace, you know, the religious left guy, out here last week talking about similar things, about how we need to have a different kind of Christian political activism. And a lot of what he had to say about taking care of community resonated with us, but none of us out here, none of us seminarians, are liberals. And so when he got to the "so let's all be Democrats" line, we said, "We can't do that. We're not liberals." But the guy said, "I'm glad to hear you articulating some of these same things from within a philosophically and intellectually conservative stance and viewpoint." So I think that there are younger conservatives, particularly religious conservatives, who are hungry for a change of pace without abandoning our conservative roots, but just think a way to think more differently about these issues.
Is this a trend? We go out, our program will go out nationwide and do remote broadcasts, and we will invite an audience in for these remote broadcasts. And without fail, we notice a demographic complexion there. The audience is made up either of gray-haired, older people, definitely not the baby boom generation, but probably their older brothers or sisters or even parents. And at the other end, the audience also contains a fair number of young professionals with children at home and with new families and things like that. Oddly enough, very, very few of the baby boom generation are in there listening. Do you notice a simpler trend with regard to the crunchy cons?
That's really interesting. I don't really have any numbers, any way to say, because I don't get to see most of my readers. But I in the talks I have been giving, I tracked a lot of young people. And some of the older people I talk to are people who say, "You know, I'm a Democrat. I'm still a registered Democrat." I'm talking about people my mom and dad's age, so that's in their 60s and 70s. My party left me, usually on cultural issues, on abortion, gay marriage, that sort of thing. But they say, "I've never felt really comfortable with the Republicans because they have a more democratic social conscience." They say they vote Republican because of the cultural issues, but they sure would like to see the Republican Party pay more attention to how the middle class and the working class are getting along. And so they're a natural audience for crunchy cons.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Rod Dreher, editorial writer and columnist for the Dallas Morning News, author of the new book, Crunchy Cons. Continue to talk about crunchy conservatives and get into some of the tenets of what is called the Crunchy Con Manifesto. Among them, the point of life is not to become a more satisfied shopper. Big business deserves as much skepticism as big government. Our culture is more important than politics. I really would like to know if our listeners are crunchy cons. Give us a call. This break is a good time to call 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727 or to email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Deaconess Pam Nielsen, senior editor at Concordia Publishing House, on the Christ-centered cross focus of growing in Christ, the new Sunday school curriculum from Concordia Publishing House.
We've been very intentional in one, teaching the scriptures. We are concerned about Bible literacy. Pastors tell us they get kids in confirmation that they don't know any of the Bible stories, they don't know any of the Bible people. So we're trying to teach the Bible stories, the who, what, where, and when. But we're teaching them in the context of Christ. And every story, every week, be it Old or New Testament, connects to Christ as the Savior.
For more information about Growing in Christ, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or find the Growing in Christ logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. It's a Christ-centered, cross-focused Sunday school curriculum, Growing in Christ.
Moral absolutes, they're missing in society.
Answers with Ken Ham, one of the builders of a large creation museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. Ken, I think most people would agree that we've got a serious moral problem in our Western societies. How serious is it?
Well, I often tell audiences that my wife and I came to America from Australia 20 years ago as missionaries to a pagan culture. And they usually hear chuckles spread across the auditorium, and then people start to clap. You see, they recognize that America is no longer a Christian nation like it used to be. Polls show just how serious the problem is. For example, among born-again Christians who don't call themselves evangelicals, only one out of every four believes that moral truth is absolute. And it's even worse among teens. Did you know only 9% of born-again teens believe in moral absolutes versus 4% of non-born-again teens? You know, for years, Mark, I've preached, literally thousands of times, that belief in absolutes will decline as the church reinterprets the obvious meaning of the Bible, beginning in Genesis. Compromise with evolutionary ideas has unlocked a door. Each generation has opened this door further and further, and now the Bible has lost its authority. And more than ever, it's essential that every believer confronts compromise. We need to promote the absolute authority of God's Word from the very first verse.
Absolute standards are increasingly becoming absent in today's culture. Well, Ken Ham provides the remedy in his free booklet, available on our website, AnswersRadio.com.
Dr. Arthur Just on what a young man will find every summer at Christ Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
It really does put him in touch with, first of all, a community of people here who love the Scriptures, who worship together, who pray together, and who enjoy, have fun, you know, doing theology. There's just a wonderful excitement and passion for the gospel that is expressed by them. But it is a way of a young man to shape his identity as one who is in Christ and to learn the Scriptures and have a real passion for the gospel.
For more information about Christ Academy, June 17th through the 30th at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Theological Seminary, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155.
It's not too early to register now for summer programs at the St. Louis Zoo. The zoo offers education programs for all ages, including Camp Kangazoo, programs for youth, young children, adults, families, scouts, and more. Call 314-768-5408 to request a summer brochure or visit stlzoo.org/education for program information.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about crunchy conservatives with Rod Dreher, author of the book Crunchy Cons. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our call-in numbers 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. On the phone in his car, Bernard is on the line. Hi, Bernard. Thanks for waiting.
Thanks very much. I was wondering if your listener would compare the political movements of today with the abolitionists of the 1860s, how would he rate the conservatives today with the radical abolitionists? That was a religious movement. Also, how would he rate as a political movement the money changers in the temple that Christ drove out with regard to being a political movement?
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate the question there, Bernard. Rod?
Well, I don't know how, if there's any analog today to the radical abolitionist of the 1860s. Our politics does not seem to be that radical, and I don't know that I could find a good analog. But with regard to the money changers, I think it's so clear that both parties are completely enthralled to the money men. I mean, you look at right now, the only three choices that we seem to have on the Republican side, at least, are Giuliani, Romney, and McCain, who have been out there raising millions and tens of millions of dollars. So a lot of people who support Governor Huckabee of Arkansas as an ordained Baptist minister say are really complaining that he can't get his message out because he doesn't have money. But I really think that one thing the church, I'm speaking broadly about all Christians, one mistake we've made is putting so much hope into politics, into political change. In the American Conservative magazine a couple weeks ago, Paul Weyrich and William Lind wrote this really amazing piece talking about how we on the right have lost the culture war. And that's not the first time Paul Weyrich has said that, but they say that, you know, we Christians, at least, and we traditional conservatives, have spent so much time trying to engage in politics, which we need to do, but we have neglected to build the kind of countercultural institutions that can stand against the spirit of the age. And I see that so intensely where I live in Texas. I mean, you're from there, Todd. You know, Collin County is the northern suburbs of Dallas. Mm. It is the most Republican county by voter registration in the whole state of Texas, which makes it probably the most Republican county in the whole country. Very, very religiously active place. The Dallas Morning News, my newspaper, did a study, though, a year or two ago about Collin County, and they found an unusual level of personal bankruptcy there among people who live there. And they talked to pastors, to priests, even to rabbis, who said that they were looking out at their congregation, and they would see their families falling apart because people were going into great personal debt to try to keep up with the Joneses. Now, you think about that. What is Christian about that? What is conservative about that? And being so materialistic that you're willing to even shatter your own family to buy things. That's the sort of thing I talk about in Crunchy Cons, how we conservatives, and I'm speaking specifically to Christians too, have got to realize man does not live by bread alone. You know, right now is the Lenten season when we're supposed to be fasting to prepare ourselves for Easter and to realize that things of the Spirit are primary. And I call conservatives to back to a recognition of the primacy of the spiritual. And what that means, Jesus has got to be Lord over all our lives, not just our sex lives, not just on matters of abortion and gay marriage, but also about the way we shepherd our money, the way we shepherd our communities and the stewardship of the earth. And it sounds kind of liberal to some people to talk that way because conservatives are not used to talking that way, but I don't see anything liberal about it.
You have written that big business deserves as much skepticism as big government. You do not hear Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh saying things like that, Rod.
Oh, of course not. But I think as Christians we have to recognize that there isn't such thing as original sin. And whenever you have a lot of power concentrated in the hands of a few men, whether it's the government or whether it's big business, you're going to have a temptation to corruption. And I believe that we on the right have got to be more suspicious about what business does, because let me tell you, I used to cover the film business, and I used to work for Rupert Murdoch. And Mr. Murdoch published a conservative newspaper, the New York Post. I worked for it, and I appreciated that he gave me a voice in that paper. I was the only pro-life columnist for a daily paper in New York. That said, Mr. Murdoch also makes a lot of money with some very sleazy programming. And a lot of conservatives, a lot of the money men on the conservative side, I think they tend to play Christian conservatives for patsies. You might remember the guy who worked for Tom DeLay when DeLay was in power. He left and became a lobbyist and got hooked up with Jack Abramoff. He wrote this email calling Christian conservatives, quote, wackos, and talked about how they can manipulate the wackos to get out there and vote a certain way that would benefit their clients. I had this sinking feeling that that's how so many in the Republican Party see people like me.
Herman is calling from Illinois. Hi, Herman. Thanks for waiting.
Yes. I have kind of raised a question. You mentioned this focusing on environment. How do you distinguish that in your focus from what many that seemingly are affiliated with the Democrats come in with this kind of quack environmental science about global warming, and in that ideal, the ideal society to live in is what Castro's Cuba already is now, where you're lucky if you have a bowl of rice a day and a rickety single-speed bicycle to ride. I mean, could you clarify exactly what you mean about the environment?
Okay, thank you very much, Herman. Rod,
okay.
clarify away.
Happy to do it. I think the essential difference between me and mainstream environmentalism has to do with the place of man in the world. A lot of the mainstream environmentalists sort of deify the earth. I'm not saying they're earth worshippers, but there seems to be no recognition within their movement that man has a place in the natural world, that man is part of the natural world. People like me, I prefer to think of myself as a conservationist more than an environmentalist, we think that man has got to be a good steward of the world. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't build things and use the earth that God gave us to help us, but we've got to realize that we have a sacred trust to take care of this earth and to make sure that the good things of the earth are there for our children and our children's children. And I don't believe that the environment, that the global warming science is junk science. I think that it's easy to be hysterical about global warming, and you see a lot of that on the left all the time. But I've looked, read a whole lot about it, and I find it impossible to believe that it's all being made up. And I think that we have got, we meaning all of us, and certainly my generation and my children's generation, have got to be more concerned about the way we use the world that God has given us so we can take care of it and make sure it's there for future generations. And if that means cutting back on the amount of carbon we put into the air, then I think we need to seriously focus on that. You got to remember, I come from South Louisiana, where I'm talking to you now, and the whole area down here was so horribly abused by the chemical companies for so long, and so many people dying of cancer down here, and it's good to see things start to turn around down here, but it didn't just happen overnight, and there was a lot of denial along the way, and a lot of companies saying, well, you know, if we have to clean this up, it's going to cost jobs. Well, guess what? It didn't cost jobs, but people still have to live here.
You know, I'm thinking while you're giving that answer, Rod, some of our listeners are saying, well, you know, he says he's on the right, but there he's just tipped his hand and on this whole environmental issue. It seems as though politically we have lost the ability or the will to be able to make any kind of fine distinctions when it comes to where people stand on these issues. If someone says, well, okay, I'm going to give some credence to the issue of global warming, immediately they are placed in the category of the left, or on other issues were placed in the category of the right. Have we lost this ability or the will to make those distinctions?
Oh boy, Todd, you really put your finger on it right there, and it's a thing that drives me so crazy about American politics. You know, I have a blog on beliefnet.com, and there are people on the left who, as soon as you get the least bit off the left-wing reservation, they clamp down on you and say, you never were a liberal, you know, we can't trust you. And there are people on the right who do the same thing. And we have this cartoonish vision of what it means to be liberal and conservative in this country. And I think that a lot of the people who are decision makers in both the Democratic and the Republican parties, they have a vested interest in keeping all of us thinking along these sort of rote, knee-jerk lines so they can keep us ginned up to keep giving money and keep giving votes. I'm not interested in what is liberal and what is conservative in a politically correct way. I'm interested in what is human. I'm interested in what it means to me as a believer in Jesus Christ and as a cultural conservative, someone who wants to see the moral integrity of society stay strong. I'm interested in what that calls out me to do politically and within my family. You know, we find that this book I'm working on now, it's my next book, I'm looking into the fall of the Roman Empire and the parallels between the way we live today in this country and what happened with the Roman Empire before they fell. And I'm particularly interested in what the Benedictine monks, the Christian monks, did to keep civilization going through the Dark Ages until it could be reborn. And I find so many eerie parallels between the late Roman Empire and our time today. And I believe that one of the things we've got to do now, we as Christians, we've got to figure out how they did it then, how the Christian community survived during the chaos of the Dark Ages, because I think that we're headed that way right now. And that's not something that the Republican Party or voting Republican all the time or Democratic is going to solve. I think our problems are so great now that we have got to have some radical countercultural thinking, and it's got to come from the Christians.
Talk about the ability of conservative leaders to be able to communicate, well, first of all, to understand, but then also to communicate to the average American. Here's the contrast, accept it or not. You've got George W. Bush, who is undoubtedly conservative, but his ability to communicate this seems hampered by the fact that he kind of grew up protected from the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Contrast him with Ronald Reagan, who grew up in very different circumstances and emerges as someone not only of great political prowess, but who is able to understand and communicate what it truly means to be conservative to the American people. What do you think of this?
I think that's a really interesting point. I mean, I was talking to Matthew Dowd, who was Bush's one of his top strategists in 2000 and 2004, and he told me that the most important thing the American people are looking for right now in their politicians is authenticity. And it's more important than being conservative or liberal. They want to know that the person who's speaking to them and trying to get their vote is authentic. And I think Bush had that for a while, but it seems to have left him. I look out there now at somebody like John McCain, because I think of he did serve his country, and whatever you think of his politics, you know, nobody can take away his heroism, suffering as a prisoner of war. He had it for a while, too. I don't know if he still does in the mind of most people. And Ronald Reagan had it in spades. I think that we look for a politician that's authentic, but we seem to demand so much of our politicians in terms of being able to perform on television that I wonder if any of them can survive the kind of scrutiny that we in the media put on them.
Folks, I want to hear from you. Do you find yourself agreeing or disagreeing with our guest, Rod Dreher? Are you a crunchy con? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Rod Dreher is an editorial writer and columnist for the Dallas Morning News, author of the new book, Crunchy Cons. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. live this Monday, the 12th of March. You've written that a conservatism that does not recognize the need for restraint, limits, humility, is ultimately not conservative. Explain what you've written there.
Well, we can't have everything. There's no such thing as a free lunch. I grew up being told that by my conservative parents, and I believe it's true. I believe that one of the core truths of conservatism is that we are finite creatures. You know, there's only one infinite power, and that's Almighty God. The rest of us are finite. We can't have everything. And as soon as you begin to think you can have everything, it's like building the Tower of Babel, and it's all going to come down on you. I look at the way what's happened, for example, in the American Southwest. Here's a good recent example. It turns out scientists have reported that drought conditions there, or the normal, or closer to the normal state of the American Southwest than the whole 20th century let us believe. In other words, we built all these great cities there in Phoenix and Scottsdale and Los Angeles, thinking that we could control nature enough to bring as much water as we needed down there for people to live. Turns out that's not true, scientists believe. And so now we are coming hard up against the natural limits of the region, and man's ingenuity cannot overcome that. I think that we have a great temptation in America to think that just because we've been able to do so many amazing things with our wealth and our technology, that the sky's the limit. We can do anything. And if we can't do it, we should do it. And I think that is a deeply radical and unconservative point of view. But it's unfortunate when you hear some conservatives, the more libertarian conservatives, buying into that. And they feel like that if you tell them no, just because we can do it doesn't mean we should do it. We should stop and think before we tear down that fence, why the fence was put up, so to speak. They say that, well, what's wrong with you? You must hate progress. Well, I have to wonder, any conservative who isn't deeply suspicious of the idea of progress, I have to wonder what kind of conservative he is.
You also talk about the family being the institution most essential to conserve by conservatives. What strikes me as sometimes mind-boggling, Rod, is that you will hear the typical Christian conservative talk about the need to preserve the traditional family. But if you ask them why, they can't tell you. And even at that, it seems like it's one of the only traditions that the typical Christian conservative is interested in preserving is just the family.
Well, I think, Todd, what a lot of Christians, a lot of conservatives don't keep in mind is what you need in society to preserve the family. I'll give a good example from my book about how houses and the places we choose to live has a direct impact on the integrity of the family. There's a man in my book who lives in suburban Detroit in a small house. Dave chose to live in the house. It belonged to his grandfather so he could be closer to his work, so he could be home to play with his child. or he would have this long commute, and they could afford that small house. Therefore, his wife could quit work and be home to be a stay-at-home mom. They made economic and material sacrifices for the good of their family. Dave said his brother lives in a giant 3,500, 4,000 square foot house in a far exurb of Detroit. He and his wife both have to work long hours to pay for this house for them and their kids. They have to spend a lot of time commuting to and from the house just to pay for it. And when on the occasion that all the kids are there together with mom and dad, the kids are off in their media room watching TV, playing video games. They don't ever come together as a family. Now, both those brothers would call themselves conservatives. Which one of those two conservatives, though, do you think has set up his physical environment in a way that will promote the integrity of the family and building family bonds? That's the kind of thing I'm talking about, Todd. If we conservatives don't stop to think about how these broader things affect our ability to protect the integrity of our family and our religious communities, then we're only getting half the picture.
It reminds me of a little thought experiment that I think the name was Charles Murray, posed in a book that he wrote back in the 80s called In Pursuit of Happiness and Good Government, where he said if you knew you were going to die and you needed to put your children in the custody of one of two families, which would you choose? The family that is intact, eating their meals together, and going to church together, but poor. Or the wealthy family where your kids would never again want for anything whatsoever, but the family very seldom saw one another. And he says that illustrates what it means, what the family really means. It's not just about having the suburbs filled with moms, dads, and kids.
You're exactly right. And I have told people when I go speak to different audiences, I say that we have got to start thinking of our homes as being like domestic monasteries, in the sense of the home has got to be a place that's mission-minded. You've got to consider that the family is on a mission to raise these kids, to raise good kids who believe in God and who have good, strong morals. And that means keeping the television, in some cases, out of the house or almost entirely, and being careful what kind of things you let into the house. And a lot of people don't think of it that way. They think that it's a lot of conservatives think it's just enough to go to church on Sunday and to hold the right opinions, the correct conservative opinions, but meanwhile they're letting the television and the popular culture raise their kids. I think we've gotten to such a point in the society where it's not enough to vote Republican and to hold conservative opinions. You've got to walk the walk. It's a pretty radical ways. And I think about as I'm studying the Benedictine monks, the most important thing they did to hold civilization together during the Dark Ages when all morality and government fell apart was their vow of stability. They believed that when they professed to join a monastery, they stayed in that monastery until the day they died. And so the people of Europe, the peasants who were scattered out and subject to raids by the barbarians, they would come huddle around these monasteries because they knew that the monks were always going to be there. In a similar way, I think about our society and how our economy is based on mobility. And we tend to think of mobility as being a good thing, the freedom to pick up and move. But that sense in our society that nothing is permanent, that we should be able to move around wherever, that the economy rules everything and it even destroys the integrity of communities, and that's a good thing, the creative destruction, I think that is a poisonous thing, actually, and we conservatives ought to be thinking a lot harder about it.
Steve calls from Wildwood. Steve, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes. I was listening as I was driving home, and it occurred to me that I probably agree a lot with your guest, because although you might consider me to be liberal on some issues, like environment, in the sense that I really care about what happens to the environment, and I think we've been entrusted with this by God, I also think that our society really seems to be going against things that are really important to us. The whole area of gay rights, the whole area of this business of gay marriage and kind of attacking the institution, the abortion issue. And so I find myself on both sides on different issues.
Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate listening and the call. Do we have a crunchy con on our hands here, Rod?
He might be. You too might be a crunchy con. He should pick up my book, which is out in paperback. Let me get a commercial in there, and check out what I'm saying, because the book is mostly interviews with people around the country, almost all of them Christians, although there's an Orthodox Jew in there who found a lot to agree with in the traditional conservative point of view. But you know, one thing the caller said that really jumped out at me about how the whole gay marriage issue has been such a huge one, and it means a lot to me, and it means a lot to every conservative Christian I know of. But look what the Republicans did when they had a chance to do something about it with the federal marriage amendment. They balked. The president came out and made a terse little statement about how he supported it, but he didn't get out there on the stump and try to rally support behind it. The Republicans in Congress, most of them didn't care either. And I feel like that was our last chance to do something substantive about the gay marriage issue, because we could keep passing these referendums at the state level, but if the Supreme Court overturns them, it's all over. And if you look at the polls, Todd, younger people 30 and under, gay marriage isn't even an issue for them. They're all in favor of it.
Two quick final questions, Rod. On the economy, have American conservatives, by and large, accepted the corollary that man was made for the economy rather than the economy for man?
Sure seems like it. Anytime you try to bring up anything that would tie the hands of business, no matter how conservative you are, you get denounced as a liberal. You must be some kind of socialist. I think that's deeply wrong, but I think that the business interests really do run the Republican Party now, and not, as the liberal media would have you believe, the Christian conservatives.
Have many conservatives misidentified the enemy, or perhaps even the front line itself, in the culture war?
Boy, what a great question. I definitely think so. I was talking to my dad today, just telling him on the front porch about Wendell Berry, the great Kentucky agrarian, farmer, and essayist. Berry calls a pox on the houses of both the liberals and the conservative Republicans. He said the liberals will not accept any restriction on sexual freedom because they consider it sacrosanct. The conservatives will not accept any limit on economic liberty because they consider that sacrosanct. He said that both of them, in their own way, are destroying the moral ecology of this country, and that is where the line should be drawn between those who believe that the individual should be free to do whatever he or she wants to do and those who believe that we have a standard, a holy standard, that we are held to, those of us who believe in a thou shalt not.
Rod Dreher has a blog, and you can read it. It's at beliefnet.com. So go to beliefnet.com/blogs/crunchycon. Very easy to find. beliefnet.com/blogs/crunchycon. And you can read everything that Rod's writing lately. He's an editorial writer and columnist for the Dallas Morning News and author of the book Crunchy Cons. Rod, it's good to talk to you again, and safe travels back to Big D.
Thank you, sir.
Tomorrow on the program, I'm going to pose a question for you now. I want you to think about it overnight. And then when we do audio open lines tomorrow, I want your answer to this question. It will not go away. This is probably going to be one of the abiding questions about the 2008 presidential election, along with the issue of religion. Does a candidate's personal life matter to you as a voter? Newt Gingrich, multiple marriages, and an admitted affair. Rudolph Giuliani, 3 marriages, admitted affairs. It really mattered when Bill Clinton was president, didn't it? It did to you, didn't it? Well, will it matter in 2008? Think about that. Give us a call or email us tomorrow during audio open lines. We'll also talk about Lutherans and political involvement tomorrow on the program with Uwe Simonetto. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.